Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Are we using outdated assumptions to plan our future? And what will it take to challenge what has become conventional wisdom? Matt Miller is a contributing editor to Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He says that while we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel of the Great Recession of the 21st century, many of the economy's long-term problems will continue to plague us if we do not recalibrate our notions of economic truths. He explores the realities we tend to misunderstand in his latest book, just released in paperback. It's called The Tyranny of Dead Ideas: Revolutionary Thinking for a New Age of Prosperity. Matt, welcome to Think.
Good to be with you, Chris.
Your concern is that we're moving forward with education policy and healthcare and economic policy that has its roots in an era that is long since over. This is a lot of this came to be at the end of the Second World War.
This is true, and one of the disappointments as we mark the first anniversary of Barack Obama being in office is that he's actually done very little to move us past these dead ideas. Obviously, he's had his hands full with trying to navigate some of the near-term problems of the economic crisis he inherited, but when you look at things like healthcare, for example, the dead idea I talk about in healthcare is the notion that your employer should take care of you, and that's the, by that I refer to the employer-based system where most of us get our health coverage, and we're basically the only advanced wealthy nation that links your health coverage to your job. And so through this recession, for example, we've lost something like 14,000 people every day have lost health coverage, millions and millions as unemployment has spiked, because only in America do we uniquely link most people's health care to their job. And even in the epic health care reform that Obama has been pushing, which now obviously after the election results last night in Massachusetts, that the prospects for Democrats being able to pass this is in some doubt. But even with what they were planning, which was a kind of once-in-a-generation effort, the Obama plan still left employers at the heart of the system because we're still stuck, and he has not led us past this notion that that it should be our companies that are taking care of us as opposed to our country.
And your sense is that not only does this harm people who are left out in the cold when, as you mentioned, they lose a job and can no longer, they don't get that insurance and they can't afford it, certainly, it also harms businesses.
Well, it does because, again, only in America do we ask businesses that now have to compete in this increasing global environment to bear the burden of health care costs, which have been soaring. Now, back in the 1950s and 1960s, maybe this didn't matter as much because health care cost much less. You had single breadwinners working at basically the way we worked was different. You had a single breadwinner who worked at a big company for 35 years, and the family around that person got their coverage through that. But we know that's all changed. People change jobs repeatedly. And for business, when you've got health care costs now at 17% of GDP, headed past 20% of GDP in the next 10 years, and this is, remember, when every other wealthy nation is spending 10 or 11%. So we're spending much more than every other country, about twice per person. And we're getting our health results aren't any better, and longevity and, you know, infant mortality, all those measures. And so we've got a very inefficient system. We're asking business to bear the burden of these costs. And, you know, growing numbers of CEOs and business leaders are saying, why should we really be in this business? But they also, their representatives in Washington, remain kind of locked into the old thinking in terms of when it's going to be safe to push beyond the employer-based system that's holding us back.
You've written about the potential benefits of a sort of hybrid health plan. Will you talk about how that might work?
Yeah, I think there are ways for us to get to a market-based kind of universal coverage that doesn't mean we have to go the road that England, for example, or Canada goes, the so-called single-payer system where all the doctors work for the government, and the government essentially controls the whole system. But in places like Switzerland or Holland, they have universal coverage. There's kind of an organized market of private insurers. The insurers are regulated so that they can't do things like, deny people for pre-existing conditions. And those are things that the Democrats have been talking about, obviously. And then people with lower incomes are subsidized if they need help to buy a decent family plan. And that's a kind of, that would get us to a kind of American-style system where we'd have universal coverage with government funding those who needed help and the private markets helping to organize and deliver the care. The irony of the election yesterday is that's basically what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts. with Ted Kennedy's encouragement a few years ago in the Massachusetts healthcare plan. And that's the model for what Obama was talking about doing for the country. And yet, you know, you have Massachusetts sending a message last night that they don't want their plan to be taken to the nation. So it's all very confused and a little bit depressing, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's something like 97% of people in Massachusetts are covered by this system.
Right, but it was much less until they enacted this a few years ago. So it's a little confusing when the new Republican from Massachusetts is saying, well, we don't want the country to have what Massachusetts has, or it's not going to do anything for Massachusetts because we already have this. Well, they got it because they were sort of a pioneer in a plan that the Democrats are talking about now for the country.
We should say here that you are equally critical of mistakes in judgment made by both Republicans and Democrats. This is not a partisan thing for you.
That's true. And yet it's also true that I worked in the Clinton White House. So I'm a Democrat, but I'm temperamentally something of a radical centrist.
Let's talk about this other idea that we have been assuming for a long time that each subsequent generation will out-earn the last. You imagine that you send your kids to school and someday they'll do a bit better than you've done. And that has not been true for a while.
That's right. And yet that's one of the ideas that I'm arguing in a frustrating way has become a dead idea because it was really built into the American creed. You know, the whole idea of upward mobility has been what drew people to the U.S. It's what led our founders to, you know, flee the aristocracy of Europe, the idea that anyone with pluck and grit and could rise as far as their hard work and willingness to educate themselves and dedication could take them. And obviously that's been a big part of the American story for 200 years, but that sort of faith in the ever-rising tide is running and colliding with the latest trends that show that upwards of 100 million Americans now live in households that are earning less than their parents did at a similar age. And this is happening before we face the full impact of economic integration with rising powers like China and India. So this is only likely to accelerate, and yet we've got this sort of built-in expectation that we're almost entitled to the kids being better off. And this doesn't mean our kids won't have a good life, but it does mean that unless we start to take serious action now, a lot more serious than what we're talking about in Washington, to provide the opportunity and security that a wealthy nation like the U.S. ought to have, we've got huge risks for the next generation.
We also hold dear the idea that anybody in this country who is willing to work hard and make some sort of personal sacrifices will prosper. But if, of course, we don't want to let go of that idea, but if we want it to be true, we need to make some changes.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think is, there's a lot of great qualities that have been built into the American character by our faith in this ever-rising tide. We're the nation of, you know, the can-do nation, the nation of inventors and entrepreneurs. We've, brought all these great inventions that have benefited the world and technologies. We helped win two world wars. We put a man on the moon. That's fantastic. I think the downside for the situation the country faces now from this almost sense of entitlement or this expectation that everyone will be better off, that the kids will continually be better off, is that we have overestimated the power of the individual, even the hardworking individual, to shape his or her economic destiny in a global era. And as we see more and more even hardworking Americans finding it difficult to get traction and upward mobility in their wages, I think we're going to have to rethink the role of the individual and the role of the community, often in terms of government, in assuring the opportunity and security that we think citizens of a wealthy nation ought to have.
Matt, why are you the person to point all this out? Why some of the things you're saying sound so obvious, and yet we really haven't adjusted the way we think about ourselves and our future?
Well, it's a good question. I don't want to beat my own chest for trying to do this, but there is a dynamic in our political system where there's almost no incentive for the two major parties to talk honestly about some of these things, and we end up kind of trapped in this situation where there's a kind of kabuki dance, and our politics end up being dominated by charades on all sides, and a lot of bull, you know, to use not to use an uncleaner word. And it's for a politician to talk honestly about the fact that there's a lot of families that are going to face wage strains over the next generation, and that there's a lot of kids who are not doing as well as their parents have. That's a very difficult thing to for politicians trying to get elected to talk about, and that's why most of our campaigns end up being run on these symbolic issues where each candidate is signaling their quote-unquote values, you know, and trying to align themselves with what they think citizens want. And it gets very hard to have a discussion about the situation we're in, where we're really moving from a period, you know, after World War II until recent decades. We had an amazing run where America was the most dominant economy. Remember, most of the world was left in rubble after World War II, most of our economic competitors. And we dominated in such a way that we sort of built in all these expectations. And now we're sort of like a business that's facing a competition from new sources, and we haven't been ready for it. And the old ways of doing things, which seem to work, don't work anymore. And it takes a while, and maybe it takes crisis, before we wake up and realize we're going to have to scrap some of the old ways of thinking and really embrace some, you know, some new ways of doing things to prosper. And the good news is, this stuff isn't rocket science, like you said. It doesn't require some, you know, weird overhaul of everything in the way we do things. It shouldn't be, for example, a hard proposition to say, you know, in the 21st century, we shouldn't put the full burden of health costs on business. We should make it possible for individuals to get health coverage and have access to group health coverage outside the job setting, and subsidize lower-income people who need help. It's just sort of rejiggering a little bit of the way we do things that would make life better for all of us.
Matt Miller is my guest. His new book is called The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, Revolutionary Thinking for a New Age of Prosperity. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372. You can join KERA as a supporting member by calling 1-888-694-6931. You might choose, if you make a $120 contribution, to receive, as our gift to you, a copy of Matt Miller's new book, The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, recently updated, by the way, with the interesting perspective on what's happened since the beginning of the Obama administration. Alan Roberts is back now. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Chris. And right now is the best time for you to go to your phone right now and give us a call and make your pledge of support for this program. We make it very easy for you. It just takes a couple of minutes, and this is the perfect time because we're in a break right now to go to your phone and give us a call at 1-888-694-6931. A lot of you have been waiting. It's now Wednesday of the pledge drive, and we're trying to keep our momentum going during this winter 2010 pledge drive and keep the support for this station going. We can only do that if you give your support right now. You can do it online very quickly or at 1-888-694-6931.
A few minutes ago, we heard from a friend, which is a member who contributes at the $1,500 level or above. If that's something that is possible for you, works in your budget, it does work out to $125 a month if you do a sustaining membership. That suddenly makes $1,500 sound a lot more affordable for a lot of us. So if you are ready to support KERA in that way, by all means, give us a call at 1-888-694-6931 and somebody can get that set up for you within just a couple of minutes.
And all these numbers that are being thrown out, it might make some people scared. $120, $1,500, it sounds like a lot. But we want you to decide, what is it worth to you? What is it worth to have Think on every day from 12 to 2, to have ATC, to have Morning Edition? What is it worth to you? We'll take anything right now. 1-888-694-6931. Thank you, Chris. And keep the support of North Texas Public Radio going.
We are really proud to be here. We are here for you, and we are here because of you. More than half of our support comes from people who listen to the station. And truly, you know, we say every dollar counts. It's true. The reality is that if everybody who listens would make a very small contribution right now, we would be done. We might not even have to come back for another fundraising drive. We ask for your support because you believe public radio matters and that it's important, and you want it to be here for you for the foreseeable future. Again, the number 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Matt Miller. He is a contributing editor to Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. His book is called The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, Revolutionary Thinking for a New Age of Prosperity. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I want to talk for a minute about taxation. Many Americans are still embracing supply-side economic theory, even though these days the conditions seem much closer to the heyday of Keynesianism. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, one of the dead ideas I talk about in the book is that taxes hurt the economy, and they're always too high. Now, why do I say that? You know, we've cut taxes, and we'll continue to cut some taxes to try and muscle through this, this tough economic time. But there is no question that in the years after we're safely back out of this economic downturn, taxes are going to rise in the country no matter who is in power. And in the book, I had John McCain's top economic advisors from the 2008 presidential campaign saying so, as well as Democrats. The reason is any honest observer who looks at this knows that we're about to retire the baby boom. When that happens, we're going to double the number of people on Social Security and Medicare. We already have something like $50 trillion in unfunded promises in those programs. And the math just doesn't work at current levels of taxation. And by the way, this has nothing to do with Obama's stimulus plan. You know, there's a lot of criticism about the spending that's been done to try and help get us out of the recession. But all those basic dynamics of the retiring of the baby boom and these trillions in unfunded promises, those were true even if the recession hadn't happened and Obama had never been elected. So the idea that taxes are going to rise in the U.S. is inevitable. Politicians on both sides will not admit this or talk about it for the obvious reasons. It's unpopular. But what that means is that we can't have the honest discussion we need about how to change the way we tax ourselves so that when taxes go up to pay for the boomers' retirement, because we can't borrow all the money from China to retire the boomers, even they won't let us do that, we figure out ways to tax ourselves in ways that are smarter for economic growth and for not harming economic growth. And in my view, that means taxing payrolls and corporations less and taxing things like consumption and dirty energy more. But this conversation is totally off the table because both parties are in cahoots to deny what is obvious to any objective observer who looks at the facts.
Which is interesting because you'd think that if you said, okay, we're going to tax payroll and corporations less, the people who really sort of seize up at the mention of increased taxes would relax.
Well, it's the problem is the political dynamic has been the Republicans have had a great ride on the tax issue since Ronald Reagan. And remember, back in those days, it was quite an achievement. For Reagan, you know, marginal tax rates then for upper-income people were something like 70%. I think that's crazy. It was a smart thing to lower marginal rates from the disincentive that they were then for hard work and investment and entrepreneurialism, et cetera. But now we've got marginal rates in the high 30s. The idea that we can, and it's sort of a fantasy at this point for Republicans, where they're playing the old record, to think that we can actually keep lowering taxes when we've got so many trillions in unfunded promises for Social Security and Medicare that nobody wants to eliminate, by the way. Even when Republicans controlled Washington, all they talked about was maybe at the margin slowing the growth of some of these programs. So no one's saying we're not going to take care of our seniors and supplement their income and health care through these programs. So it's just a fantasy that we can cut these taxes further, but Republicans don't want to give up the issue. And Democrats, knowing how powerful the tax issue is, want to be for some kind of tax cuts too. And they just want them to be more targeted or more toward people who they think need more help than upper-income folks, who Republicans typically focus on and include in their tax cuts. So we're in deep denial on both sides. The only question is when the jig is going to be up. It may be that China or foreign creditors of ours at some point say, you know what, we don't trust that you guys are going to get your fiscal house in order, and they start doing things that will force us to get our act together. And it would be a shame if a great nation like the United States can't have a reasonably honest conversation about how to actually pay for the government we say we want.
Do you think Barack Obama would have been elected if he hadn't set his limit for increasing taxes on people making more than $250,000 a year?
It's a great question. We clearly know that he thinks he wouldn't have been elected if he had not done that. And that's the big, fudge at the heart of his whole economic program, because it's not sustained. Maybe my assumption is that they're going to try and carry that out through a first term and then say that circumstances have changed, because they'll, you know, politicians take their campaign promises very seriously, in my experience. But it just means that they're, and he's about to propose in the next week or two when he unveils his budget. It looks like he's going to unveil some kind of bipartisan commission that's supposed to look at the budget situation and propose options for solving it. And, you know, there's no way any honest group would do that without including tax increases, and not just on the quote-unquote wealthy, because there's not enough money there. You know, if we're going to have a country with Social Security and Medicare and these kind of supports for retirement, and have a government that still does things we think it needs to do for national defense, for schools, for national parks, for biomedical research, all the things we expect from government, there's no question the middle class is going to have to be part of paying more for that. And he has not been honest about it.
Matt Miller is my guest. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's go to the phones now, and we'll speak with Bernie in Plano. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good afternoon. I agree with Mr. Miller fully on the tax matter, and I practiced taxation for half a century. He's got that absolutely correct. But there's something that he said when he brought up the election yesterday in Massachusetts. The people in Massachusetts did not vote to keep the Massachusetts plan from being available to other Americans, except for those comparatively few, I would guess, who thought that that would make their local taxes go up. I don't think they were mean-spirited about it, and I think the actual reasons for why people voted for the way they did, the only thing we know for certainty is that Scott Brown ran a good campaign and Ms. Coakley ran a terrible campaign. The rest is just conjecture and political posturing, and I'm not accusing Mr. Miller of that, but he seems to perhaps have fallen into that big gulf of people trying to figure out what's in other people's minds. It can't be done. But thank you for the comments about the taxation and the Keynesian model. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. Do you want to respond to that, Matt?
Yeah, I think he's totally right. I think we have no idea what was really in people's minds, and if I slipped into that, he's right to call me out on it. But the truth is, the battle to interpret the meaning of this, coming on top of the Virginia and New Jersey gubernatorial races a few months back, where Republicans also won, is going to really shape what happens now on health care and a lot of Obama's agenda. Because the question is, how are Democrats looking to their own midterm races in November going to feel vulnerable based on the dynamics and what they define as the lessons of this big upset victory? And that's the framing of the lessons from this. That's the first comes the campaign, then there's the battle to interpret the meaning of that election. And I was quite depressed. I'm usually a congenitally optimistic person about we can solve our problems, that this, we can figure this out. But you do think that when you have a situation where Democrats may feel their agenda is stalled because they don't have 60 votes in the Senate, we almost seem ungovernable as a nation, because it's impossible to have these kind of supermajorities to do anything. That's just not, in a democracy with two major parties, you're almost never going to have this kind of supermajority support. And, maybe it'll push Obama to try and figure out how to be more bipartisan. But what I fear is that this is all a replay of what I saw when I worked in the Clinton White House in 93 and 94, which was the Republicans made a choice politically that their best calculation and their best way to regain power was to be totally in opposition. I think we've seen some of that so far under Obama. And, the question of how we get out of this cycle of just the kind of the Hadleys and the McCoys feuding for power is really one of the great questions now for the country.
Let's go next on the phones to Ken in Plano. Hello, Ken.
Hi. I received something very interesting in the mail a couple of days ago, and it was from Sam Johnson, my congressman, and it was one of his campaign brochures. And I am telling you, there was not a single reference to the fact that he was a Republican. And this was startling to me, because what it meant was conservatism is being repackaged under a different name, under not the Republican brand name, but a different brand name. than what we're used to seeing under the Tea Party brand name. And it's almost as if we're being sold the same ideas back to us under a different name. And I was hoping your guests could comment on how many ways are there to get this country out of the situation we're in economically, you know, in light of all the repackaging that's going on. The same ideas being sold to us. I hope I was articulate enough on that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you called. Thanks. What do you think, Matt?
I think we're in a couple of observations. First, independents are the biggest party in the country now, people who don't identify themselves as loyal to either party. And that's true in it's basically true in everywhere in the country. And I think we're in this situation now where, because our economic situation, because of this great recession, is tough, obviously. Lots of people are suffering, lots of businesses and families hurting. But even when we're out of this great recession and we're headed there, and over the next couple of years, as the banks sort of stabilize and lending continues, we'll be back to a more quote-unquote normal time, we're still going to face all these, what I view as deeper problems that I talk about in the book. Our adjustment to the rise of powers like China and India, the globalization of the economy, the way the rapid technological change is changing the nature of work, and it's going to put continued wage stresses on growing and growing numbers of American workers. And so the problem is, for politicians and for the country, is that every 2 years, let's say, when we have these elections, people are still going to feel like, wait a minute, it's not getting better. It's not. I don't feel more secure. I'm still struggling in terms. I'm still worried about losing my job. The cost of health care is unaffordable. I can't afford to save enough to send my kids to college because tuition keeps skyrocketing. All those problems will not improve over these two-year cycles, especially with the phony kind of solutions that are on offer from both sides. And so I think that we're going to have the electorate swinging back and forth every couple of years saying, in a kind of, you know, primal scream, whoever's in power, whoever's in charge, we're going to send a message that what you're doing isn't working. We're mad. And I think we could see that anti-incumbency kind of fervor play out over a number of years. It's hard to see when this may go away because we're not having an honest conversation as a country about some of the tougher measures we'd need to take to actually get our fiscal house in order, how to make things like college and health care more affordable. And if we don't take real action, I think we're going to be in this cycle where we're going to have constant voter anger at whoever is supposedly, quote, in charge.
Matt Miller is my guest. His book is called The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, Revolutionary Thinking for a New Age of Prosperity. We'll resume our conversation with him in a couple of minutes, and you can join us at 1-800-933-5372. I am joined now by Alan Roberts. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Chris, and things are going well back in Pledge Central, and now is a perfect time to get your phone call in this afternoon to make your pledge of support for North Texas Public Radio. We make it easy for you, and now is the best time. We're going to be in a little break here for a minute, so it's perfect for you to go to the phone right now and call 1-888-694-6931. And let's be honest here, there are programs on this station, I'll put it this way, that you choose not to listen to, and that's fine. If you're listening right now, Think is not one of those programs. It's one of your favorite programs. So think of your contribution as going towards the programs that you do enjoy, like Think.
If you are a big fan of Think, you can choose to receive a Think coffee mug if you make a $60 contribution. A lot of you are interested in this copy that we have available of Matt Miller's new book, The Tyranny of Dead Ideas. That is available for a $120 contribution. We are not selling you the book for $120. It's out in paperback now. It's quite affordable. You can buy it for $15. We encourage you to get the book either way. But if you want to get the book and you're ready to support KERA, make that contribution now and we'll sort of sweeten the deal. The telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. Of course, you can always make a contribution online at kera.org. Alan, I think before we do anything else, we should say thank you to some of the many people who have called and gone online this hour.
Definitely. A lot of calls coming in. Paul Sampson in Terrell, also William Brown in Arlington, Janet Hall in Capel, and Mike Brock in Dallas. Join with these people this afternoon and give us your pledge, your contribution to North Texas Public Radio and KERA and this program at 1-888-694-6931. Remember for a moment something on this program, a guest you heard on this program, or maybe a segment on All Things Considered or Morning Edition for me. I stick through and listen to all the Car Talk segments. I can't get away from them. Think about those ones that were so captivated. We call them driveway moments, or ones where you learn something. for you, for most of you listening, that's what happens every day from 12 to 2. You learn something every day, you listen to these guests, and you can't get away from them. That's what public radio is. It is about you, it's about our listeners, it's about our callers, the people that are calling in right now, to hear their opinion. It's your voice, your opinions here at KERA, and we'd love to hear from you now. 1-888-694-6931.
I'm actually really glad that we do things the way we do in public radio, because I don't think I would survive in a climate where I had to sit there for 2 hours every day and talk about my opinions and what I thought and what I thought you ought to believe. And if you disagreed with me, then you would be sort of persona non grata. I just wouldn't thrive in that environment, because I find something really interesting in just about every guest that we have on the show, and I hope that that comes through. Jeff Whittington, the senior producer, and I laugh about this, but the show is not called Believe, it's called Think, because we just want to put it out there and let you explore ideas. We find that to be a fascinating way to spend our time. We know that a lot of you share that, and when you do, we would ask that you just consider how much it's worth to you financially. The telephone number to make a contribution is 1-888-694-6931. You'll be joining a lot of good folks who have already made contributions. George Dabrowski in Dallas, Larry Froggy in Kemp, Lynn Schrack in Louisville, Mr. and Mrs. Jeff Harkinson in Dallas. Lots of folks who are calling to start new memberships, maybe join for the first time or renew a membership.
And a great thing to do is this day sponsor, $365, that's a dollar a day. And let me see if I get this right.
All right.
You get special messaging, three special messaging throughout the year.
Throughout the day, this one particular day.
Yes, but in any day you choose throughout this year.
If it's not taken, yes.
Yes, it's a happy birthday, congratulations. You kind of take over the programming a little bit and say what
exciting
you want to say. Yes, it's $365 today. It's $1 a day if you want to think about it that way. It's a great way to think about it. Not very much when you consider what you get from this station. 1-888-694-6931.
Remember, you can also go online and make your contribution. You can do that with a credit or a debit card. You can set up a sustaining membership, which is a little bank draft every month. Perhaps you're a sustaining member at the $5 a month level and you're ready to move up to $10. You can always get in touch with us and make that change. We are happy to do that for you. Again, the number, 1-800-694-6931. If you were interested in a copy of Matt Miller's book, we have that available. This is the most recently updated version, too. The first edition came out last year. This one has a new chapter about the Obama administration specifically. Give us a call, 1-888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Matt Miller. We're talking about his new book, The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, Revolutionary Thinking for a New Age of Prosperity. Join us by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Matt, I don't want to let our time run out here without talking about education in this country. We know that American schools as a whole, American students are losing out to those in other countries, and yet most of us take it as gospel truth that entirely locally controlled school systems are a good thing. Why are we so resistant to nationalized efforts to make improvements?
It's understandable, obviously. Local control, local involvement, parental involvement in the fate of a school is essential to a school's success, and I obviously support that. But what people don't realize is when we talk about local control of schools, we really mean local control and funding of schools, which, again, just like with healthcare, it's sort of a uniquely American setup. Only in America do we rely basically on local property taxes, then supplemented more recently in recent decades by associated state taxes to pay for more than 90% of what gets spent in schools. And what that does is it creates these huge disparities between the resources per pupil that wealthy, more affluent suburbs typically tend to have and the poorer downtown, inner city, or rural communities tend to have. We are the only advanced nation that will say that there should be, that will tolerate vastly different amount of resources going to rich and poor kids for their education. Conservatives in other countries take it as a given that poor kids should have as much spent on them as better off kids. And if anything, even the consensus in other countries is that poor kids may need some more spent on them to help with different supports that help them overcome the disadvantages they come into the world with. Now, and again, money is not the only thing that matters, obviously, in education, but it's a lot because the biggest expense for most school districts is the cost of teacher salaries and principal salaries. And so it shouldn't surprise us that when the suburban schools pay more, have much nicer working conditions, and have kids who come to school without the myriad problems that a lot of the kids from the tougher socioeconomic problems have, and so they're easier to teach, the best teachers in America gravitate to the best suburban schools, and we are relying on a missionary plan, essentially, to educate poor kids. And the missionary plan is not working. We've got, and this is directly a function of our tradition of local control and funding of schools. So what I say is that we need to have the federal government, which is now only spending around 9 cents on the dollar in terms of what gets spent on K-12 education, should increase to something like 25 to 30 cents on the dollar and use that money to target it to less affluent neighborhoods to lift the bottom so that poorer schools can attract the kind of teachers that the suburban schools have. And interestingly, when I did the research for this, Richard Nixon was on the verge of a major initiative to propose just this kind of idea until he got distracted by something called Watergate. But what does it tell you that Richard Nixon, 35 years ago, was willing to be much bolder on behalf of poor kids than our first African-American president is in the year 2010? It shows you how our ambitions have shriveled and how the climate of opinion has so dramatically changed.
Matt Miller is my guest. We'll go back to the phones now and this time speak with Jeffrey in Richardson. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
When I hear things like the middle class is going to have to, if you will, belly up to the bar and pay more, I'd just like Mr. Miller to quantify a bit. What does he mean by middle class? I mean, when we throw around these terms like middle class or Cadillac health care plans, they're very rarely defined. That's one question. The other is, what about taxing capital gains? Why don't we hear more about that? And I'll take my questions off the air.
Thanks.
Sure. To give you an idea of the magnitude that I'm talking about, right now the federal government has typically spent around 20% of GDP, of gross domestic product, of the size of the economy. Now, it's spiked because of all the spaghetti that's been thrown against the wall through the stimulus plans and other stuff, so maybe it's going to be 24, 25 for a year or two, but it'll settle in around 23% of GDP. My view is that as the baby boomers retire, instead of being around 20, 21, 22% of GDP to pay for these programs without continuing to saddle our kids with more debt, we're going to end up somewhere around 27% of GDP or 28% of GDP. And so the question is, and we've typically taxed around 18% of GDP, so we can't have, I mean, that kind of fiscal hole would be unsustainable, and that means that everybody is going to be asked to pay more. I think that the income tax rates at the high end will go up, but as I explained earlier, I don't think going, you know, having marginal income tax rates like they were before Ronald Reagan cut them, I don't think that's good for the economy to have marginal rates on wealthy people at 70%. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be, for the kind of extraordinary ill-gotten gains that I think are characterized a lot of these Wall Street bonuses, the idea that you would do special taxes to try and reclaim some of that money and have it contribute to the common good, I think that's okay. But I think in general, you're not going to have marginal tax rates that high. I do think we're going to end up or should end up with something like a European-style value-added tax, a consumption tax, as a way to raise money from everyone. For the kind of government that we want. I think we don't want to put it all on income taxes because it's just bad for growth and it's bad for the economy. But when I say middle class, I mean basically all Americans are going to have to contribute to this because that's where most of the country is.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We go next to Nathan in Waxahachie. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, I have a question for Mr. Miller. He had spoken earlier about the raising of taxes and also slightly alluded to my question in reference to year after year and time after time of electing new officials, there are talks of dropping taxes, yet none of them are fond of actually cutting those which the taxes are needed to fund. I was actually just going to ask if you saw any trends in the United States government to go away from more of a communalistic governance to more of a family-centered governance, that is, less of a we are cared for by the society, but rather we are cared for as a private community or even as a family, because you look back in history and you can see a scary trend that came into effect back in FDR's day whenever they first started out these new society programs. Sure, they were great whenever they first came out, but, you know, just like the public busing system, it deteriorates, it breaks down, and it has become nothing but a money pit. And, I mean, if you think through the years, the greatest expenditure for our government.
Nathan, I'm going to have you stop. I think we've got your question. I've only got about a minute more to let Matt answer, so I'm going to move on to that. Thank you so much for your call.
It's a fair question. There are people who say we made a choice starting in the 30s, and most advanced nations have actually to a greater extent than we do, to say that for certain of the basic elements of security in life, some kind of secure dignity in retirement, some kind of help with health care, especially for seniors, although most other countries do it, make sure that everybody has some kind of basic health care security. We're alone in not having that. And that requires some kind of common expense through taxation. And my own view is that there are ways to do that and to continue to do that, even with the aging population we have and the underserved young people, especially poor young people who are so hurt by the neglect they suffer in today's society through no fault of their own. There are ways to do that that are still consistent with a strong capitalist economy that can generate growth and social justice together. And I think one of the things we need to realize is that other countries are doing a better job of combining those two things together, growth and social justice, and we can do that in this era ahead with smart policies, and that we don't need to go back, and I think shouldn't, be in a situation where it's every man for himself or even just every family for themselves, that there's some common goods as a society we should come together and assure folks, and that doesn't mean we'll take away personal incentive for hard work and achievement and the innovation of capitalism.
Matt Miller is a contributing editor to Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. His newest book is just out in paperback. It's called The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, Revolutionary Thinking for a New Age of Prosperity. Matt, thank you so much for giving us the hour.
Glad to be with you.
My name is Chris Boyd. I want to thank all of you who have listened this hour, and especially thank all of you who have called or gone online to become members of KERA. The telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online and make a contribution at KERA.org. Alan Roberts is back. Hey, Alan.
Hey, and there's still time to get in on getting The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, the book by Matt Miller, who you just heard. That's at the $120 level this afternoon. That's a suggested level and a thank you gift that we're asking and we're giving away to all our listeners who call in right now and make their pledge of support for this program. You know, Chris, listening through the show today, I've really enjoyed listening to the callers on this show. And I think they add so much, and in a way, it's what public radio is all about. It's about the listener's voice. It's about their opinion. And we are here because of them. We operate this station because of you, the listener, and because of your generous support. This station and this programming, it's a reflection of this community. I haven't been here very long in Dallas, but I was really glad to get here and see that in KERA. It's a great station, and it reflects North Texas.
We try to serve you locally because we are based here. All of us at KERA live in North Texas. We want this to reflect what this part of the country feels like. Yes, we have some national programming as well, and we think it's great stuff. But, it is a wonderful thing to be able to also generate programs locally. Very often, the guests are of national and international acclaim. These are not simply people who are from the community, although we have some amazing people that reside here as well. But what we want to do is bring you a national quality program that's produced for you here. You make it possible when you call 1-888-694-6931, or you go online to KERA.org. It's very easy to make a contribution. You can do it with a debit or a credit card. It really only takes about 2 minutes, whether you make the phone call or you go online to KERA.org.
If this kind of programming is important to you, we need to hear from you this afternoon. This is entertainment and it's information, and they're coming together. Not there's not a lot of programs that have both.
But it's not infotainment, we're happy to say.
That's true. In torment. KERA is an important part, is an important community resource. And those of you listening right now, you know all this. So why haven't you called, those of you who haven't? We'd like to hear from you now. If you're sitting around, you're waiting, it's already Wednesday of this pledge drive. The time to call is right now. There's plenty of time. You're not going to miss any programming. The important thing is that we need to hear from you. 1-888-694-6931.
Just think about what KERA and public radio offers to you that is unduplicated in this market. You know, there are a lot of other radio stations, and we have nothing against them. They all provide a service. But if you've turned them on, a lot of them sound similar to one another. I think you would agree with us that KERA sounds different from any of them. If the values of public radio, of civil discourse, of respectful exchange of information and ideas, if those are things that you think deserve to be cherished and protected and cultivated in North Texas, your dollars, please know your dollars help to make that possible. This is really making a vote with your money and making an investment in a value that matters to you. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. You know, we have among our thank you gifts, of course, we have Matt Miller's book, The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, at the $120 level. We also have this Carl Castle is my press secretary t-shirt.
For all the Carl Castle heads out there.
Absolutely. It actually has Carl's picture on the front. It says Carl Castle is my press secretary on the back. We have it available in large and extra large. It's a blue t-shirt. Kind of fun. You know, if you are someone who collects funky t-shirts, this would be a great thing to add to your collection while supporting KERA.
There are many levels of contribution levels you can make this afternoon by calling us right now. There is the $90, there is the $120 level where you get The Tyranny of Dead Ideas by Matt Miller, who you've just been hearing today on today's Think. If you'd like to get that book, it's at the $120 level, a suggested amount this afternoon, but really, and anything...
The sky's the limit.
That's true. That's true. Is this your program? I'm not asking you, Chris, because literally it is your program. But listeners out there, is Think your program? Think of your contribution as going to the programs that you enjoy every week or every day. Car Talk, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, those are some of my favorites. Go through the list right now and think about that those are where your contribution is going. 1-888-694-6931.
And, you know, I think Alan and I are among those that, you know, if we were independently wealthy, which is not something that's often attached to public radio employment, but I have to tell you this, I call this a lottery job. If I won the lottery, I would still be there the next day.
Definitely.
Because I really love working here. But even if we were all of those of us who work here were in a position to do that, there are still costs when it comes to the transmitter and the electricity and making sure that everything runs properly and the signal sounds right and the microphones. There are costs associated with the journalism that you hear from NPR. You know, we just have heard a lot of reports coming out of Haiti this week. There are all kinds of resources that go to that. So your money helps to make all of this possible. It really wouldn't happen without money. Unfortunately, nothing in this world is free. We really appreciate those of you who listen and who understand that and make a contribution because it's worth paying for the things that you use. You know, it's really what your money says about you, the choices that you make about how to spend it. Give us a call now at 1-800-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
Help us shorten the length of this drive. We'd love to wrap this thing up in the next couple of days, and we're going really strong. Today has been a great day. We've had a good week, actually, but we've got to keep the momentum going. And for those of you out there who are waiting until the end of the week, that's usually me. So I know there's a lot of you
true
out there.
True confessions.
Yeah, who are waiting. You're thinking, Morning Edition, Friday, I'll do it. Or next week, I'll go online. No. Now is the perfect time to go to kera.org or 1-888-694-6931.
You know, it bears pointing out, and this is not a requirement for employment here, but I think just about everybody on our staff is a member. Nobody checks off a little box, and there's no mean email from HR. We are not required, but we believe in the product. This is something that even though we're here all day and contributing to it, we listen on our off time, and so we contribute to the station. We would ask that you consider doing the same thing. We know that you've got a lot of expenses. That's why we don't say you have to give us $500 to be a member or you have to support us at this level. You know, look, if you can do $50 a year, that's fantastic. If $1,500 a year is possible for you, we would ask that you consider it. But your contribution really does keep KERA strong. Please don't doubt for a moment that every dollar counts.
You know, I'm a huge podcast listener. I listen every day, so I'd like to challenge all the podcast listeners. It's like you were saying, there are many costs that go into this station. These podcasts don't just show up. I know there's a lot of you out there because we can see the numbers on that. And all the web updates for Think, finding out who's going to be on the program the next day, it doesn't just appear. There are people here that update that for you every day. If you utilize that, we need to hear from you now.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also make your contribution online at KERA.org. Thank you.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at KERA.org/Think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.